Tom Strini, welcome.
Hi, Mark.
What's your official title here at Third Coast Digest?
I am the senior editor and one of the managing partners of the business.
So some people, when they call you behind your back, the czar of Third Coast Digest.
I'm the sub-czar. John Shannon is the czar.
You're the sub-czar. Yeah. You're the iron fist that John Shannon wields.
Well, I think if, you know, everybody has a sort of slogan around here, a sort of personal motto, and mine would be, does that make sense to you? Because that's that's how I encourage our employees to do what needs to be done. Does that make sense to you, what I just suggested? Because I really want to hear if it doesn't make sense to you.
Right. Because if it doesn't make sense to them, it's not going to go anywhere.
Maybe I hit a bad idea.
Yeah. Now, the holidays are here.
The holidays, yes.
Do the holidays have a particular meaning to you? I mean,
yes, they do.
A memory that sort of...
Right. I grew up in suburban Catholic churches, mostly suburban, in the St. Louis area. And I remember when I was kindergarten, we would start learning all the 19th century Christmas songs.
Not the traditional Christmas carols, but the more...
Well, the traditional carols, they only date back to about 1830, most of them. They don't go back much farther than that. Of course, I didn't know that at the time, but I'm talking about Angels We Have Heard on High, O Come, Emmanuel, Came Upon a Midnight Clear, that sort of thing.
Right.
And one of the big things about Christmas was Midnight Mass. And in our household, my dad was a plasterer, so he got up before dawn and was out the door by 6 o'clock. And so we were a sort of early to bed, early to rise family.
So Midnight Mass was a strain.
Midnight Mass was a thrilling thing to a 7-year-old who never got to stay up past 8 o'clock.
Right.
So we would not only go to Midnight Mass, but from a very young age... they picked me to be one of the choir boys, and so we would get to wear the black and white, the cassock and the surplice, and
is it a red bow in the front?
No, just like an altar boy.
Okay,
sort of thing.
Right.
And we would get to process down the aisle, and the candles are lit all along the aisle, and we file into the front row, and then we would sing our little songs, or two or three or four of them, in unison in the front row of the church. Now,
with all everybody's families, everybody watching.
Midnight Mass, everybody's there. So this
big
was
deal,
a
right.
big, exciting deal. And of course, you know, you're used to going to bed at 8 o'clock, and it's midnight when this thing even starts. So you're just wired as a little kid. You're just wired.
And there are probably cookies and stuff around and hot chocolate to keep you going?
After.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't think about that ahead of time because you're back in some concrete block classroom drilling this with some nun glaring at you to make sure you knew the words and wouldn't sort of go white in front of you and forget what to do. But the whole thing was enormously exciting. And the other thing you've got to remember is, you know, these are just shoebox churches that were hastily built in the suburbs in the 50s and early 60s.
Right.
And they weren't that big, but when you're little...
They didn't have acoustical engineers.
No acoustical engineering. It was like being in a giant bathtub. But that was really turned out to be part of the charm of it. But, you know, it seems so big when you're only...
5, 6, 7 years
tall.
Old.
You know, you're 6 or 7 years old, and everything seems big and mysterious, and the lights are kind of down, and the candles are up, and the air just seems electric. And when you start to sing, you just feel the air vibrating around you. And I'll never forget this. You know, we were just little kids. We weren't trained singers. It never occurred to them to teach us how to read music. We just learned by rote. But so, of course, we're all over the place during the phrase. But we had this way of getting to that last note of the phrase, and everybody would find the pitch, and you could just feel it in your body. You could just feel that resonance when everybody finally got together and got the right pitch. And it's something I've never forgotten. And I think that experience really led to sort of a whole life in music. For me, and I can still remember the first time. This was at Holy Ghost Parish in Berkeley, Missouri, and they brought us all into the cafeteria and said, we're going to learn to sing, O Come All Ye Faithful.
Right.
And we sang it, O Come All Ye Faithful. And then we did it in Latin. Venite adoremus.
You still remember?
Oh yes, of course I still remember.
Right,
it's like a branding iron in my brain. From
do you still go to midnight mass?
I don't. I've left all of that behind me. But I still love Christmas. I love the music. I love to sing those songs. I still sing them at Christmas.
Well, singing in a choir, too, especially at a young age, before you even understand what music is, just making those sounds, and the way you describe that moment of when it actually becomes music, when it's just noise and sounds, and then when it becomes something that we identify as music, and you feel it in your body surrounded by a bunch of other kids your age, that's kind of a magical moment.
It really is, and I didn't really know what it was until that first rehearsal, when we first started learning those songs in the cafeteria at Holy Ghost School. And I just felt it. It was just the most gripping thing to me. And when we were singing, I was just mesmerized by it. And the Latin for some of the songs just made it so much more mysterious and exotic. And I thought that was just the most amazing moment of my little life.
That's great. It's there are many things upon which I will go on a rant about the Catholic Church, but the sense of ceremony and the sense of theater that it bestows upon you is not one of them. That's really one of the great things to embrace. Now, you celebrate Christmas. I've heard that you are have a knack for Christmas tree decorating. Is this true?
Actually, I'm the world's greatest living authority on Christmas tree decorating.
Okay.
At least I'm pretty sure of it.
No, yeah. You're the first one that I've met, the only one that I've met, so you've got that title as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
now, does this start from picking the tree out?
It starts from picking the tree out, and it all depends on your ceiling height.
Right.
So the tree should come to about 3 inches from the ceiling.
Is that with the star or whatever you put on top of it?
That's pre-star.
That's pre-star.
Pre-angel, okay. In my case. I have an angel who plays a flute, and which I've had since 1981.
Okay.
And she always goes up there.
Right.
But in order to measure this right, you need to bring your tape measure. Right. Although in my case, and now that we have 8-foot ceilings, I no longer need to bring my tape measure. All I need to do is fully extend my right arm.
Right.
And if my right arm comes just shy of the top of the tree, I know it'll be perfect.
Then
because
you're okay.
That's perfect for 8-foot ceilings.
Cool.
I'm about 6 feet.
Right.
In case you're writing this down at home, folks. So now you bring the tree home, you measure again. You cut off the stump nice and clean with a pruning saw.
Right.
You do that outside.
Cut it off flat.
Cut it off flat.
Right.
Then you bring the tree in bottom first.
Do you notch it at all? Anything in the bottom?
No, I do not notch it because there's a cleat in my container that is going to hold and it's going to create its own little notch.
Right.
But you bring the tree in bottom first.
Right.
Because then the branches will fold up to get through the doorway.
Right.
Now, one more thing about selection. You want a relatively narrow footprint for this tree. You don't want one of these things that spreads out over an 8-foot diameter and then you're walking sideways around it, unless, of course, you live in the Hearst Mansion or something.
Right. I was going to say it depends a little bit on the size of the room it's going into, but I understand.
It depends a great deal, and it's also much harder to decorate if you have to reach way into the tree.
Right.
So if there are a few branches, I'll get out my little pruning shears.
You do this outside?
I do this inside because you have to let the tree stand for a little bit because you don't know what its shape is
going to
be.
A couple of hours, a full day?
A couple of hours.
Okay.
You don't know what its shape is going to be until it settles.
Right.
Now you go around and you trim off all the stray hairs, as it were,
right,
so that you have a nice, clean cone right. shape. Now you're ready to put on the lights.
The lights first. Do you start at first. The top or do you start at the bottom?
You start at the bottom.
Okay.
And you buy an extension cord with more than one outlet along the run.
Right.
And you tape that to the trunk of the tree. Oh. So now you have many outlets within the tree.
That would solve for all my problems.
I'm here to serve, Mark.
Thank you.
To help.
Thank you.
The first thing you do then is you take a strand of lights, and now let's get with it. It's the 20th century, 21st century, folks. It's got to be all LED lights.
Right.
No more incandescent lights. Right. They don't work.
We don't need to waste the energy.
We don't need to waste the energy. They fail right and left. And LED lights are so durable and so beautiful and so safe.
They really make it glow.
They make it glow. And here's how you make your tree really glow. The first two runs of lights you do, you reach into the tree and you wrap it around the trunk all the way up and then all the way down again. So
right.
the first lights are at the core of your tree, and your tree now will glow from the inside out.
Right.
And ornaments that you place within the tree so that people who observe it will have a sense of discovery as they peer into the tree and there's a little ornament hidden there, there's another one hidden there, and those ornaments are illuminated from the trunk.
From the inside. They've got some backlight.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, then how do you do lights, different layers?
Then we have different layers.
Right.
We run out and around in an inner ring, then out and around in an outer ring around the edge of the tree.
Right.
And especially you want to have a lot of lights. I might have 500 lights on an 8-foot tree.
I was going to ask you, how many strands of lights do you use?
I don't know how many strands, but I would say it's right
lights.
Around 500
right.
lamps
So your
altogether.
Tree really is a tree of light.
It really is a tree of light. And now the LED lights are more like points of light.
Right.
And so you need probably
Sounds like
more
George
of
Bush
them
language.
With it does.
I hate to bring up bad memories at Christmas time. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay.
But, and of course, your heavier ornaments go along the bottom, and you do trim off maybe a good 6 inches to a foot of bottom branches. They're gone entirely because, remember, as the tree ages, it will...
starts to droop
will,
a little bit.
It
right.
will come down more, and you want room for that.
And you want room for the presents under
it,
too.
And you want room for presents under it. And your heavier ornaments, of course, go more toward the bottom, and as you go up, you generally get lighter.
Lighter element. Right.
And the more... we have many sort of sentimental ornaments that are...
I was going to say, your angel, you say, comes from 1981.
Exactly.
And do you have ornaments that are older than that, and do you just keep adding every year?
People bring gifts of ornaments at the holidays when we entertain, so those get added. I really don't, you know, as those old glass ornaments break or fade, you know, the paint oxidizes and they start to clear up. I might buy a little box of those now and then, but we have plenty of ornaments. We have boxes and boxes of them.
And not all glass, not all that. Your trees aren't themed in any way.
No. It's a history, really.
Right.
And 1981, our first son was born. And so I remember opening a bank account in St. Louis when we lived there at the time. And they were giving away these beautiful sort of lucite ornaments of manger scenes and things like that, and the light shines through them. They're clear. They're clear and molded. And so those I always pick and put in exactly a certain place, so they'll be in front of a light. So if it's a Santa scene, I'll make sure it's in front of a red light, so it goes through that way.
So the light comes through.
If it's a Madonna scene, I'll put blue behind it, right?
Cool.
So, and I place those very carefully, and they're all marked Christmas 1981.
Now, does anyone get to help you, or is this a one-man operation and they just get to ooh and ah?
I like it when they help me.
Okay.
Good. And
but you reserve editorial.
I am the senior editor of the Christmas tree, and I have the final judgment on it, the final cut on it. And but you know, it's really just the two of us now, and our oldest son lives in New York, and Yeah, so.
But you still do it.
Even I still do it.
Right.
And I still get an 8-foot tree, a real tree.
Right.
And I will until I'm too infirm to get it into the house.
Right. Good. Congratulations. It sounds great. I'm going to come by your house. Do you put it in a window so people on the street can see it?
Yes. Yes, we do. In the little house that we're in now, it really works pretty well.
I'll bet. Yeah.
We've had big houses and little houses, so we've had a variety of sizes of
trees.
Right.
Now that you're empty nesters, you have a little house, but it fills it up nicely. With Christmas, Tom, thanks for talking to me.
It's my pleasure. Merry Christmas to you, Mark.
You too. Happy holidays.